Welcome everyone, this is All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 210, recording this on Tuesday the 14th of March 2017. I'm Steve Litchfield, fairly fresh though it's the end of the day. With me I have Rafe Blandford, who's been jetting around Europe rather a bit over the last month.
That's right. Well, I'm not sure jetting around is quite the right phrase, but yes, I've been doing some travel for work. I've also been in Barcelona for Mobile World Congress, and which more a little bit later. But yes, we're recording this in the evening, as we usually do. So please bear with us if we make any glitches or make any mistakes. As always, we'll be talking through all the week's news. We've got a few things to round up, and actually, I imagine we'll get into a bit of industry chat as well.
Yes, yes. Now, one of the things that annoys me in the industry at large, and I'm sure you got this a bit at MWC, Rafe, is people saying, all about windowsphone.com, you know, that site. I thought Windows Phone and Windows 10 Mobile, I thought that was dead. And this is a point that annoys me, because yes, we haven't had much first-party hardware for quite a while now, but as I commented in the Flows story that went up about an hour before we recorded this, Windows 10 Mobile gets more updates than most phones on iOS or Android. We're getting basically a production update every single month with Patch Tuesday. Admittedly, February was a glitch, but most months. Plus all those insider builds as well. There's an awful lot going on in the Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile world. And just to emphasize the fact that people may be hopping around the different rings and builds, trying to, you know, keep up with the fun, basically. I did a trilogy of tutorials. First of all, how to return your Windows 10 Mobile Insider's phone to production status, which I imagine quite a few people are doing now that we're quite close to having a production version of the Creators Update. Then also, how to upgrade smoothly from Windows Phone 8.1 to Windows 10 Mobile, again staying in production, but going from the older version, because as you may be aware, I think we covered it in a previous podcast, Skype is about to stop working for Windows Phone 8.1. It's still going as I record this, but it's about to go. And the BBC iPlayer, certainly for our UK residents, that's about to stop working as an application. And also Internet Explorer for 8.1 doesn't support iPlayer either. So that's two really good reasons to get from 8.1 if you have a compatible device. And there's a whole list in the linked article, which we'll put in the show notes, to go from 8.1 up to Windows 10 Mobile. And then the third of the trilogy was basically how to reset and refresh your Windows 10 Mobile smartphone. So if, like Rafe or myself, you've been going through various insider builds and you've upgraded here and upgraded there and patched there, and you're not really quite sure how long it was since you last refreshed and reset everything, then I wanted to give people in that article and also in the other two articles step-by-step instructions. If you're in any of those three positions, and hopefully those three situations cover all bases, then basically just follow my steps, and in theory you shouldn't lose anything and you should be well right where you wanted to be. So hopefully, Rafe, that you might even find one of those three useful yourself.
Yes, well, I always find these useful because I don't always keep quite as up to date as I should do. And actually, when I do sometimes get an update, it's sort of not quite as stable as it could be, or, you know, I'm playing around with something new. And so going through the reset, I rather like in this reset tutorial that your first step is export your podcast feeds, which probably rather gives away the data that you find important. And frankly, I would agree with this too, because there's nothing more annoying than having to go through the subscriptions. But it's also sort of a testament to the fact that a lot of the other stuff gets backed up automatically, and you've obviously got backup and you know, some of the other things mentioned in here. And the other one that is actually a very good tip is to make sure the photos are up to date, because I have a couple of times lost things because, you know, you just get so used to it going up to OneDrive automatically. And actually it happens on other platforms as well, because of course, depending on the circumstances, sometimes those won't sync if the battery's low, you're away from Wi-Fi, whatever it happens to be. So it's great to have that kind of list to work through. And yes, as you say, the other tutorials, it's interesting. I had this conversation with a couple of Windows Phone users recently who said, you know, they hadn't actually gone to Windows 10 Mobile, but some of those things that you were talking about, and iPlayer specifically, was actually causing them to think about it. Actually, it was also causing them to think about abandoning Windows Phone altogether. But I sort of said, actually, you don't need to, because it works fine. Works fine in Edge and or via the browser. I mean, you're right to say that, you know, it's when I run into people I know who go, oh, is All About Windows Phone still going? And they say, somewhat of a surprised tone in their voice. And they go, yes, it's still going. I mean, and of course, it's not the size of the ecosystems it once was, and certainly compared to the glory days of sort of Nokia and Symbian, which you kind of always remind that when you go to somewhere like Barcelona, because it's obviously the venue for many launch events, including, of course, something like the A28. And I still remember the reaction to that, because it was one of the very few press conferences I've been at when people were genuinely very surprised and actually didn't expect to see that really multi-megapixel phone that really, really did take things forward. But at the same time, I sort of go, well, yes, it's not at the forefront, but you have to remember that there are still a lot of people out there using the devices, and Microsoft certainly still has ambitions in this space, and it's just small. And I think the thing is, people in the smartphone world have got so used to having mega communities and mega ecosystems of hundreds of millions of people. It's absolutely right to say Windows isn't mainstream in the way that Android and iOS is. And I think particularly those who've been around a long time and remember Nokia, it's sad to see it shrink to that. But of course, there's still millions of users out there. And you know, we know from the traffic to sites like All About Windows Phone, WP Central and other, you know, Windows sites, that there's still a lot of interest in it. And actually, you don't need that many people to build a kind of viable community. And in some ways, I think we actually get more informed and kind of a greater bit of debate in the comments now than we ever have done before, you know, particularly if the right article sparks people off. And I think Steve, I mean, I suppose I could accuse Steve of comment bait sometimes on his articles, but actually, you know, there's a general level of discussion and people share stuff back and forth, which is absolutely great. At the same time, I would say, you know, you just have to be a bit careful that you don't get stuck inside your own bubble. And you know, that's something that I think any community can be guilty of. But yeah, it's sort of, it's frustrating because people automatically assume just because it's not part of the sort of mainstream, or rather isn't hundreds of millions like iOS and Android, that there isn't therefore at least some sense of community or something still going on. And of course, when you put it in the context of wider Windows, obviously I think that that changes the game again. I mean, a lot is going to depend on whether we see a Surface phone or new hardware in due course. And MWC was notable. Basically, we didn't see anything. There are a few hints at things, as we maybe talk about a little bit later, but not in the same ways as we've had in the past. But yeah, you know, it's that's the situation it is. And we still manage to find plenty to talk about on a weekly basis. And I think that will continue for a little while yet as well. Regardless of what happens in the sort of next 9 months or so.
Yeah, and I'll let you know when I run out of things to write about on the site, Rafe. But the list in the last week or so, we had Working Hours, which is a fantastic UWP for time tracking. We had Hyperlight EX, a great game. Popcorn Trivia, which is pretty good, although rather sport by freemium. Deus Ex Go, quite a famous game by Square Enix. That's now on Windows 10 Mobile. Grover Pro has been updated. Good Doc is another universal Windows platform app that helps you find medical help. Hopic Explorer, doesn't it sounds rather an odd name, but it's a web dev client, and that's another universal Windows platform application. It just goes on. Project Studio is a massive, massive application. UWP, so you can run it on your Windows several Windows laptops and tablets across a team, and it'll all sync together and help you manage a project. There are some fairly major universal Windows platform apps and systems out there, and they're coming along on a weekly basis, quite literally, which is why I try and highlight them. So it's certainly an active ecosystem. You're quite right, Rafe. There's a great sense of community in the comments. And to be honest, I'd rather read sort of 55 comments on a story on AWP, in which most of the people are being sensible, rather than the typical 500 with 80% of them being trolls on a site like Windows Central, which, much as I love it, just because of its sheer popularity, does tend to attract all sort of the hoi polloi.
It's a different type of audience, and actually it's great to have both within the Windows community. I think it's great to have lots of strong sites. And actually, one of the interesting things about all the UWP apps is I'm almost surprised that it's as active as it is, and we are able to highlight these things. And you know, that smaller size perhaps lends a sense of community that you don't get elsewhere. And certainly I know some of the people are really engaged, and we, you know, really very much appreciate that. Even if, you know, as I say, you're maybe not seeing the hundreds of applications drop each day as you do on Android or iOS, but you can still find plenty. I mean, just looking at the last week, as you say, there's been some great stuff. Also, I think it's very noticeable that the UWP strategy of Microsoft does appear to have paid dividends, because it's clear that some of the applications are being developed with the desktop in mind, but are also being released onto mobile. I think it also actually speaks to the advantage that Microsoft has about having such a strong developer history. And, you know, it's a company that's always prided itself on supporting them well. So I think a lot of people try out Microsoft technologies just because they want to, you know, get current. And maybe that's for work reasons, or maybe that's just, you know, they have the history there. But we've certainly benefited from that. And I think compared to other ecosystems that I've seen die back, I've been actually very pleasantly surprised by the continuing developer support, which, as I say, I put down to kind of good developer relations on Microsoft's part, but also this UWP sort of bringing stuff in from the desktop to mobile. And obviously for people who are still using Windows 10 Mobile as their primary device, that's actually, you know, a really good thing. It's also interesting, I do speak to quite a few people who say they're actually keeping up an interest in Windows 10 Mobile, they're just because they like playing with the latest thing on smartphones, and actually it's a little bit different and refreshing compared to some of the sameness you get on Android and iOS. And actually I'd certainly put myself in that camp. I mean, for various reasons, I actually end up using all three platforms at different times. And, you know, I probably have increased, if I'm completely honest, the amount I use iOS and Android over the past 12 months. And partly that's about hardware freshness, partly that's about, you know, needing to explore things for work and for, you know, other projects as well. But I do still find myself with that sense of familiar and just, you know, it's the live tiles. It's kind of this familiarity principle, of course. It's what you get used to. But I wonder if there's not a few more geeks out there a bit like that. I know there's also people who have completely switched over and send great delight in telling me about it and how much better it is on the other side of the fence. But something tells me grass is greener and all that.
Indeed. We did mention that you've been travelling, and of course MWC 2017 was, you were there for work, but there were a couple of Windows 10 Mobile stories. HP was teasing, I don't suppose for 1 minute you had a chance to see it, because it was A, because it was behind glass, and B, because MWC is a rather large show, but the HP, for example, was teasing a revamped, slimmer, more consumery version of the Elite X3. Did you hear about that? I did do a story on the site.
So I heard about this and I did try and hunt it down, but I think when I went and had a look, it was probably on display somewhere else, which makes me think that maybe they just had very few of these models and they were showing them off to a few partners and things like that. But from the evidence, as well, I actually did have a quick chat with them about it. Not surprisingly, they weren't really willing to say anything about it. But you can see from some of the photos that I've seen from elsewhere that it does have kind of, I would say it's probably a tweaked design rather than completely reworked. It's a sort of the same principle, you know, this large phone, the sort of whole thing around the business use case and the enterprise use case, particularly when you get to docks and things like that, was still very much apparent. Probably sort of the design has just come on in the last 12 months following some of the wider trends in the industry. So smaller bezel, that appeared to be a slightly brighter screen.
Yeah.
It's got some updated branding on it, but very little about what's inside it. It wouldn't surprise me if this is a updated hardware inside, maybe a more recent version of the Snapdragon. Yeah. And, you know, other components. But the information on this was relatively thin on the ground, and I know you weren't able to track much down about this. Yeah. But presumably also running more recent version of software, I understand you also could have picked up hints of an updated dock, which I didn't see anything about when I was out in Barcelona, but evidently was also sort of being displayed in at least a limited way.
Yeah, yeah, there's a new dock and there's also a new lap dock. All of these were seen either in kind of, you know, behind closed doors or behind glass. And it seems to me, Rafe, I mean, we were both part of the timescale for the Elite X3 last year, and it was around about this time of the year that the Elite X3 was announced, and then over the course of the next few months, we got our first look at it, our first hands-on for real. And then it was, you know, sometime in the autumn when it first started to appear for retail, and I suspect they're working on the same timescale here. This will be the Elite X3, you know, Mark II or whatever they want to call it, the laptop Mark II, and probably the desktop Mark II if they want to be that anal. And then over the course of the summer, it's going to be refined, shown to partners, firmware fixed up, and then it will appear sometime late summer or early autumn. And of course, with the phone side of things, by then it will have the Creators Update, or Redstone 2 as to use its code name. That will be fully mature and fully out on all production devices. So this one will arrive with Redstone 2. And the initial Elite X3, as you will testify, arrived with a very early version of Windows 10 Mobile Threshold, even though the Threshold didn't even support the fingerprint. scanner. So the Elite X-ray really did arrive sort of half stillborn. We're hoping that this new one arrives rather more complete. And it should be, really, with the creators update on board. Windows 10 Mobile is now pretty darn mature. And the core UWP apps that Microsoft supplies are also very, very fully featured and mature. So I think fingers crossed for later in 2017 for this new Elite X-ray. The question is, what will they call it? Where do you go from X-ray? Do you call it an X4? Because then you've got to think of four use cases for it rather than three. Or do you call it the X3-2? Or what I suspect they'll do, just keep calling it the X3, but let it be known this is the 2017 model.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most likely scenario. But I mean, what's interesting about this is, of course, it does suggest that HP is actually fairly committed to Windows in this kind of form factor, which you could be forgiven for questioning, given the somewhat lukewarm response to the Elite X3, and that includes our own review of this. And actually, I hope they read the Steve Litchfield book-like review in detail and take on board some of the criticism and some of the feedback in the new version. In fact, I mean, I know from talking to project managers that's absolutely the sort of thing that does get done. They collect feedback from all sorts of places, including kind of detailed web reviews, and actually you probably find that people are reading the comments that you're leaving on the articles as well to kind of try and understand what people think about it and what their view is. All that gets collected back. You know, it always surprises me when you do speak to some of the kind of product managers, actually how much detail, and you know, often they're very passionate about collecting that kind of feedback. And of course, you know, it won't ever be one thing that changes their mind. It will always be that collated and curated version of it. But you know, the Elite X3, I mean, I still think the idea is solid, and so actually it's great to see HP continuing to work on this. And I guess one of the nice things about it kind of being an enterprise product with a company like HP, they can probably afford to go through a couple of iterations to kind of improve things. And it, you know, it's almost like the first version was a little bit of a chance for them to learn. You know, you could probably make the argument, given all the comments and discussion we've had about it, is maybe that was one that shouldn't have made it out into the public. But then again, you know, it's easy to say that about any product. So the fact they're actually willing to show it off in public tells me that, you know, there's still a commitment there, because I'm, you know, it was probably inevitable that they would be working on a follow-up while the first version was being released. But the fact they've now chosen to show that off in public a year after kind of the X3 had its first debut makes me think there's the commitment to actually also get this one out onto the market, because it would have been very easy just to keep quiet for another 6 months, and I don't think anyone would have criticized them for that. We weren't really expecting to see an updated X3, but the fact they've chosen to release it does show me that there's a bit of commitment. So it'll be interesting to see when exactly this arrives. I think the fact that it was behind glass and that there's really no information about this in terms of the specification. I mean, the new laptop does appear to be a little bit bigger and has some extra ports on it. But, you know, to be quite honest, this could be a prototype, so I wouldn't necessarily read this as the final product anyway. There's plenty of changes, and, you know, actually I'm not sure about the bigger size, whether that makes more sense to me. I guess it depends on your perspective, what you want to do with it. But for me, good that HP is continuing to do things here. And I guess for the Windows 10 mobile fans, it's nice to see that there's a little bit of hardware, because other than HP, you know, it was a pretty dry MWC for Windows. Actually, Microsoft had a pretty small stand, so they've certainly cut down from what they have done in previous years, or what they've done in combination with Nokia the last few years. But there was something inevitable about that. There's no point making a big splash if you haven't got anything to talk about.
Yeah, there was actually news from Alcatel. They confirmed they're bringing the Idol 4S Pro, which we've now reviewed, and it's Windows, quote, with Windows 10 guys for T-Mobile and then SIM-free over in North America. That's now been reviewed by our good friend Anthony Fear on our site. But they're now bringing that as the Idol 4S Pro to Europe and beyond, they say, but not until June. So, all rather a frustrating delay. Yes. Given that the Idol 4S with Android on board came out sometime, I'm tempted to say July, August last year, we'll basically be talking almost a year's delay, and it comes with a lower resolution screen. So, we do kind of feel like second-rate cousins at this point, but the Idol 4S Pro is coming out for us in UK and Europe.
And that does fulfill a prediction we made in the podcast a little bit earlier this year, albeit we didn't get the timing quite right. We thought it would arrive rather sooner than that.
Yeah.
And it's sort of frustrating that it hasn't arrived. I mean, it makes you wonder why that is the timeline for it. I mean, is that because it's being requested by an operator, or they've got a sales channel for then, because obviously, as you say, it's the device in one sense has been out for, or will have been out for a year by that time in its Android form factor. I wonder how much is actually the same inside. I mean, it's not, you know, there's the screen size. I mean, the specifications do appear to be very similar.
Yeah.
But is that time required to kind of get the software ready? Seems unlikely given that it is available in the US. So I'm not quite sure, you know, why you got that big gap. But nonetheless, I guess at least there will be a new Windows 10 mobile phone out in Europe this year in the summer. So, you know, it does feel like we're scraping the barrel a bit to find some of the positives in terms of news out of MWC. But actually, that's kind of reflected in the sort of the wider handset news. I don't know if it's worth talking a little bit about that, Steve.
Yeah, do you want to just give people a sort of 5-minute summary of the highlights of MWC, as from your perspective?
Well, I mean, it's such a huge show. It's actually really sort of 4-in-1, and you can talk about all the things like IoT and marketing and networks. And we might cover that in a future podcast, because I think it's, you know, a rich vein of conversation to sort of chat through. But none of it is really very urgent. I mean, the big things were actually 5G getting a bit close to reality, but not really. So exciting 4G network with, you know, gigabit LTE. And then IoT, actually the big thing for me was that was just a lot closer to reality because there were more point solution examples, but also this idea of things like NB-IoT, so sort of networks for IoT devices getting a lot closer. But I think the thing that's still close to a lot of people's hearts who listen to this podcast is hearing about the hardware. And there's sort of three things I want to talk about, one of which is kind of the new flagships. I thought the G6 from LG was pretty impressive. I really like the idea of this 18:9, although as one of my colleagues pointed out, that's actually just 2:1 aspect ratio on the screen. So, you know, it's taller than it is wider, and it makes it easy to hold. I think that's overdue. I'm sure that's a trend we're going to see more widely adopted. It works really well. LG, compared to their kind of modular approach last year, have definitely gone back to basics. Quite like that idea. I mean, it's sort of very pure in that smartphone experience. The camera appears to be pretty good as well by all accounts. And then, you know, you've got Moto mods on the Moto Z, kind of a bit like the LG approach, but I would argue done a little bit more seriously and with a little bit more elegance. So it's kind of interesting to see the same old ideas come around. And there was this push for differentiation, always trying to do something different. And it feels like it's getting harder to do. You can still throw all the kitchen sink and the specs at it, and Sony kind of did that with the Xperia XZ Premium, with the first phone with a Snapdragon 835, and that's the gigabit LTE I referred to earlier. But honestly, for Sony, it feels like that is almost a flagship to show off its camera technology, and given that the Sony sensors are used in so many other flagships, it's almost a demonstration of what the camera can do, and it's a positive halo effect for the Sony brand as a whole. But actually, that seems to be a pretty strong device as well. It was interesting to see kind of 4K HDR technology on the screen. People are always going to be a bit skeptical about that, but actually does make for a pretty good virtual reality experience, and the slow-mo on the camera was impressive. But actually, what was more impressive for me on the Sony booth, they had things like the Sony Xperia Touch, which is basically a projector and an Android tablet combined together. It's a short-throw projector, so it's basically a box that sits in front of the wall and then puts so anything up to about 26-inch screen up on the wall, and then you can touch it or you can make gestures at it. That idea of, you know, how devices might evolve, and obviously, you know, this, you know, there's no screen, but there is a screen because it's a projector. You know, actually, that's quite interesting to think about with where trends go. You know, we've always assumed smartphones and smart devices have a screen, but with things like the voice control coming in with Alexa Voice or that Xperia Touch, you know, what does that look like? You know, do we have to have big monitors or big TV screens in the home and the office? That sort of got me thinking a bit, as did their kind of Xperia Ear concept, which is kind of a virtual assistant and AI sitting in a smart headpiece. And they had Agent, which was a little bit like Alexa, but with a screen. And so all of those things, actually that much broader hardware pattern. And yes, there are a few other flagships, notably from Huawei, the P10. And then you had a little bit of retro thing going on. There was TCL with their BlackBerry Key One, and probably the biggest news of the show that dominated the headlines, at least in the mainstream media, was the Nokia 3310, that kind of comeback device. Honestly, I mean, it very clever marketing, because, of course, everyone was talking about it, and it enabled Nokia, or rather HMD Global, to talk about the 3, the 5, and the 6, which are those mid-tier Android devices, which I thought were actually pretty strong.
Yeah.
You know, good from a design point of view, maybe a bit of a price premium for both that design and the Nokia name, but certainly worth looking at. And but of course, as I say, that's HMD Global. So effectively, I mean, it's not quite like this, but Nokia outsourced handsets. And that's kind of a reflection of where handsets are in general. It's you know, become a commoditized product. It's perhaps not as interesting. There isn't, you know, that excitement that there once was. And yet Nokia is very representative of what MWC is like as a whole. So there's this massive booth. Most of it's about networks, but then there's an IoT section. There's a health section with all the Withings rebrand. So you see Nokia branded watches and trackers and health devices. That was kind of interesting to see. Plus then Ozo, which is the kind of high-end 360 streaming camera. I mean, that's an amazing piece of technology, frankly. And then off on one side was this sort of outsourced HMD Global. Now, it's actually a bit more complicated than that, and Nokia done that for a reason. But that and TCL kind of just, it reminded me that handsets aren't quite at the center of MWC as it once were, basically, because, you know, they've all become quite similar. And so the show, in terms of new devices, is dominated by those mid-tier type devices, and Alcatel announcing them, loads of different brands announcing them. And it's worth reminding ourselves that actually for most people, the majority of the world experiences mobile through those mid-tier Android devices, not something on the high end.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if a company thinks about how do you create mobile services, what you should be doing, I mean, my best advice would actually be go and pick up a mid-tier Android device. And actually one of the new Nokia ones might be a nice way to do it while still having a bit of design and sort of a bit of nostalgia. But yes, 3310 with Snake on it, albeit a Gameloft branded version of Snake, so not the same at all. And kind of it made me smile, because the Nokia 250, which was announced, you know, very quietly, I think just before Christmas, is basically the identical phone to the 3310. It's just got a different wrapper around it. But it does speak, of course, to that power of design and familiarity and nostalgia. So that shouldn't be dismissed out of hand. So really interesting from that point of view in handsets. And certainly made me think a bit. And the same thing with BlackBerry. And actually, there was something being shown off at 4 years from now, which I think was from Planet Computing, a sort of Genesis device, which basically took a Cyan 5 keyboard and stuck it in that similar clamshell form factor. Actually, the same designer as the Cyan 5 is involved. It's a Kickstarter campaign. There are some questions around some of the people involved in it were also involved in the Vega Kickstarter campaign, and that hasn't been entirely without trouble. But nonetheless, kind of, again, that nostalgia coming in. And frankly, actually, I'd love to have a Cyan 5 Lite device, but with an updated Android system. There's also going to be a dual boot option for Linux. We'll make sure I put some link to that in the show notes and all of that. And then, but there is still room for differentiation, because you had someone like Oppo doing their optical zoom device, and it was in a concept device rather than one that's kind of on the market or going to be sold. And the, you know, we've talked in the past about there's always something you can do with cameras. In this case, it was an optical zoom, up to 5x optical zoom, I think it was. And it works by effectively using a prism to rotate the light coming in, and then using the length of the phone to be able to have the movable optical elements. Because, of course, most smartphones now are so thin that actually trying to put any movable parts in or do the optical lenses, there just isn't the space to do it. By rotating it 90 degrees, you can use the full width of the phone. So I thought that was a clever idea. Hard to tell how well it's going to work in practice. And then there's other sorts of differentiation. There was a company producing, I think it was something like a 500 euro Android phone made out of carbon fiber and Kevlar. But as a consequence, it kind of weighed 100 grams, incredibly light, but still with great battery life. And so there's still room to do things a bit different, but just not in the mainstream anymore. You know, the LG G6 is kind of emblematic of where smartphone flagships are. It's got loads of great technology in it, but there isn't anything sort of really revolutionary. And so you kind of have to look around the edges. And the fact that the Nokia 3310 dominated the headlines is probably a pretty sad indictment for smartphone and handset news in general. But also, it's actually just representing the fact that they are now completely mainstream. And in the kind of established markets, 80% plus of people have a smartphone. There's, you know, 1.5 billion of them being sold every year. It's just, it's easy to forget that scale, especially when you think back to years past when, you know, we were celebrating Symbian for selling the first 10 million smartphones in a year, and then 100 million, and now we're at 15 times that volume. It has changed the scale. And of course, all the attention has moved on to elsewhere, but you shouldn't forget just how big an impact that's having, and just what that means, everyone having a personal computer in the pocket. Even if all the things we now start thinking about in terms of innovative and new and interesting are the things that orbit around smartphones, and be that the smart car, that's always present at MWC, the smart home, kind of IoT, and all the sensors that that will bring. And actually that will, I think, have a transformative effect. Maybe not as quickly as people think. I mean, a lot of it does get overhyped, and MWC is guilty of that as ever. You know, AI was a big buzzword, you know, so was 5G. And, you know, you still have virtual reality bubbling under there. But even virtual reality is kind of a good example of how things go through this hype curve that, yes, it was sort of still being used to do wacky demos. But then there were some things that you thought really kind of interesting. And my favorite one was actually out of a Samsung incubator lab that basically enabled people who were partially sighted to be able to see more clearly again by basically using a VR headset to change the focal length and change what people could see and present it in a different way. It's just that kind of lateral thinking you still see a lot of. And then, you know, on the IoT front, you see the Internet of Seals, which is St. Andrews University working to track harbour seals in the Orkney Islands. That's done in partnership with Vodafone on their M2M network, just basically banging a device with a SIM on a seal, able to track when it comes and goes and sort of work out information about population. You see all of that, and then you sort of see all the smart cities, and you start to go, yeah, I can see this is the next big thing for mobile in a way. It's IoT. But actually, the changing nature of the show is that really mobile has an effect on almost everything now. It touches so much of our lives. It's therefore hard to kind of get excited about any one thing. It's just, but as I say, reminding yourself of that scale when there's 102,000 people in Barcelona talking about it does bring home to you just how huge it is. And, you know, it's a far cry from, you know, 15 years ago, Steve, where actually you could probably be, relatively speaking, keep up with all the news going on in high-end mobile in terms of smartphones or PDAs. And actually, in terms of the people covering it, you probably could know most of them personally or keep up with what they were saying. And, you know, it's just a handful of companies. And now it's just so huge and extend out into so many places. You know, you can be an expert in just one area of IoT, one vertical, and that's hard enough to do. You know, even keeping up with all the different handsets is difficult. You know, there are the flagships, there's the mid-tier stuff, but then all sorts of new brands coming along, and each year you see something different and a new idea come in. So it's still an amazing show to go to, and as I'm sure I'll talk about things that I saw and bore everyone to tears in the next few podcasts or over the next few months as we come up with relevant topics and discussion points.
At the risk of going back to the Steve Litchfield reminiscences topic from a few podcasts ago, just on that subject of knowing everything in a smaller industry, when it was the Scion palm tops, I used to regale people with my party trick, which was not only knowing the hardware, obviously, there's about one hardware release every 2 years, one new palm top. I knew every single application, I literally, every single mainstream application for the Scions, I knew it. And I knew which version they were on. So they could say, Steve, what's the latest number of file sync or something? And I'd say, oh, that's up to 3.03. And because there were only 300 or 400, it's still quite a feat of memory, but there were only 300 or 400 applications in total. Yeah. And here we are now, where we're in the Android and iOS world, where we've got literally a million applications. I know an awful lot of them are filler, but there are a huge number. We've got new phones, certainly in the Android world, now being released almost on a weekly basis. And over the last 2 or 3 weeks, obviously because of MWC, it's gone kind of crazy. So as you say, it's a vast, vast industry now. Just a few plugs there, by the way. Back in my video podcast series, The Phone Show, in 302, which came out about a week and a half ago, I did an overview of what I thought were the main handset releases and news from MWC. And that's sort of easy to digest 5 minute form there over at stevelitchfield.com. also, in Phone Show 303, you mentioned there, Rafe, the sort of the new breed of sort of lower mid-range Android handsets, and really very well specified and with premium metal builds, yet only £200 to £300, which is way, way less than the flagships of today. And in 303, I covered the ZTE Axon 7 Mini, which I thought was a really good example of that breed. And others recently, we've seen things like the from Wiley Fox, and also from Honor 6X was another in that same breed, which you pick them up and you think this is a flagship, and then when you look in detail down at the specs, you realize it is actually a lower mid-ranger. And even things like the venerable Lumia 950s have it beat. But these manufacturers are doing a great job of making their quote mid-range handsets appear like flagships and feel like flagships in the hand.
Yeah, for me that's kind of been one of the big changes recently. That kind of premium feel has gone down the market, and actually at the same time at the upper end they've had to make more of an effort, whether it's something like, you know, the new material on the HTC Ultra or kind of the curved glass that you typically see on the higher end handsets, you know, and Samsung with the Edge device is a good example of that. But then you do get these really solid mid-tier devices, but it's not just in the design. It also feels like, because Google's put a lot of effort into making sure Android runs smoothly, particularly when you sort of get past Android 6, those devices are much better value. It is fair to say it still can slow down a bit if you start really using a lot of things on the device. And I think Android still suffers from that more than some of the other platforms. And it's probably more apparent on the mid-tier devices, simply because you're probably closer to those constraints. But at the same time, you know, the capability and the price is absolutely fantastic. It's actually, you know, a lot of people have asked me, you know, what do I think of these HMD Global or these Nokia handsets? They suddenly have to go into a really, really competitive space. And, you know, yes, they're very nice. And I was particularly taken, I thought the Nokia 5 was a good combination of price and design. The Nokia 6 is a little bit more expensive, maybe harder to justify on that equation. And the Nokia 3 definitely felt like a lower end handset. But it's going to be tricky for them to stand out from the crowd, which is why actually doing something like the 3310, because of course everyone would mention that. And then at the bottom of the story, there'd be a paragraph on those Android handsets. So they got way more attention for them than they might otherwise have done. But actually it's going to be really hard for HMD Global to kind of find, you know, enough room to have some margins on those. I mean, they're doing everything right. They're keeping it small scale. They're outsourcing the manufacturer to Foxconn. You know, they're being smart about the way they use software from Google. And they're certainly making everything they can of the Nokia name and the, you know, the familiarity. But also there's a large proportion of the population, especially in some markets, you know, has real trust for that. And actually it sort of ties in well with some of the other things that Nokia are doing. I mean, actually getting into the health space is kind of interesting, because I think that, again, is sort of dependable, trust, solidity, all of those things kind of tie into that. But it's going to be hard for them because, yeah, you put it up against something like some of the Honor range, or some of the, you mentioned the ZTE Axon range, you know, they probably provide better value for money. And actually the design is getting pretty close as well. So then it just becomes about, you know, do you want the name or just that sense of something more reliable or more trustworthy? And it does become more about perception and actually particularly cracking into the younger part of the market that probably doesn't have that same fondness or that same kind of institutional memory for the Nokia brand is going to be hard. So it'll be really interesting to see how they do. You know, they talk about ambitious targets with, you know, 5-10% market share, and I kind of wish them every success. But and there's a lot of the old Nokia people are actually involved in them. So, you know, they talk about having the ancestry and the DNA, and actually I think that's probably fair enough, because there is a lot of it in there. And certainly, you know, you did get the impression that you were picking up what felt like a Nokia device. And, you know, it was almost a bit like alternate reality, you know, if Nokia had not gone Windows and had gone Android, you know, is this the sort of thing that you'd have got? But I think people should have no doubt it's a shadow of what it might have been. And obviously it's not really Nokia, it's HMD Global. You know, however many people they have that are Nokians in there, you do have to be a little bit realistic and say, you know, a lot of that is about the power of brand, the power of marketing. It doesn't mean they're not going to be good devices, but I think you have to try and be rational about it and judge it on its merits. And there's something to be said, isn't there, for going after a brand that you kind of trust and recognize, because the alternative, you know, if you want to get maximum value, you absolutely go after the Chinese brands because they're best bumper. But then, you know, you get something like OnePlus a bit further away from that, and then you get Wiley Fox, you know, so UK, although of course it's really China handset again, and Nokia is sort of maybe playing in that same space. I mean, would you be interested in one of those devices, Steve?
The Nokia 6 in particular, yes. I mean, there's rumours that I know of a Nokia 8 at this, which point I think of it being the N8, and maybe they can play on N8 nostalgia. But yeah, the Nokia 6, I mean, nearly stock Android and with stereo speakers and some of the pretty good Nokia camera. I mean, hasn't got Juha Alakaku and Damien Dinning and all the other, the old team are not behind it, but it's not going to be a bad phone. Not, I think I, for one, will be pre-ordering this Nokia 6, if only out for curiosity. Just a couple of things before we finish, just a few corrections, well, comments really. You mentioned that, I think it was the Oppo phone with the quote 5x optical zoom. It was actually a 3x optical zoom with an extra, with software enhancements because of the two lenses it uses. And also the fact the Zenfone did it first, I think last year, with the Zenfone Z3 zoom, which also had a transverse optical. So this idea has been seen before. The problem with any optical zoom, as we found going back as far as the Nokia N93 back in the day, is that the moment you have a long sort of periscope or telescopic, you know, physically moving lenses to the zooming, you're reducing the aperture massively. And we've become so used to phone cameras having large apertures these days, so they can take really good low light shots. All of a sudden, you put in a periscope and a long set of zoom lens optics, and all of a sudden your aperture's gone down to, you know, f over 3.6 or something, and you can only take shots and zoomed shots in bright sunlight. So there are issues with doing it that way. I would still rather have a Lumia 1020, Rafe.
Yeah, well, thank you, Steve, for picking me up on those, because as I talked about the Oppo phone, I'm sure I'm familiar with this from somewhere. And yeah, it's interesting because I actually feel that the sacrifice in that case are actually too far the other way. And actually the 1020 and its approach of effectively doing a crop, I think, works better for that zoom, particularly, you know, because you can maintain, as you say, that bigger aperture. So, you know, it's nice to see innovation. But, you know, I think there's a reason that it hadn't been done in a mainstream way before, because from a technical point of view, not that difficult. So, yes, there's always more to come. So I'm sure we'll be talking about this more, and we'll probably get back to some more Windows 10 mobile type topics. I know we've got a few things to talk about. But that's probably a good place to draw the podcast to a conclusion. But if anyone's got any feedback or what they think are the good phones or what caught their attention, we'd love to hear about it. Maybe we can finish by asking Steve a difficult question. I mean, I know you've been looking at your highlights in the phone show, but is there one that you'd pick out as a phone that you're kind of really keen to get your hands on outside of the Windows world?
Did you know, that's a very interesting question, because I don't think there is, because so many of them now are becoming so similar and also so highly priced. I mean, at this point, you get to the point where phones are costing £800, £900, certainly all the flagships that were announced, and Samsung's just about to hit us with the S8, the rumoured retail price of somewhere close to £1,000. At that point, you start thinking, well, I can't afford to go out and buy several and then decide which one. I guess you could buy them and return them, but you really do have to pick and choose a lot more, and there's not that much to choose between them. For me, by far the most interesting was that Nokia 6, because it was relatively affordable. I think the retail price for that Nokia 6 was somewhere in the region of 200 euros, 210 euros, which may come out at under £200, which for a stock Android, a bit of Nokia DNA, a bit of TLC from them, a decent build, a pretty good camera, and front-facing stereo speakers, which I always like. That was the phone of the show for me. I didn't care too much for the 3310, because that 3310 was actually before my time. I didn't get into the mobile phone side of things until about 1999. I think the 3310 was perhaps a bit before that.
It was. I think it's 20 years old.
Wow,
kind of what
yeah.
Announced it, but yeah, 49 euros for that phone. It's a 2G phone, so actually you can't use it in some markets, won't work in America, so the margins on that must be something else, talking about pricing. But yeah, I do actually want to return to the pricing topic in a future podcast. It's kind of hit the UK harder because of, you know, basically currency fluctuations after the EU referendum, but actually it's a wider trend that phones have been getting a bit more expensive. It always used to be we said anything over $500 or £500 was considered pretty expensive, and we're seeing more and more phones head, as you know, not just past $600 or $700, but to $800, $1,000. Plenty of rumors around the Samsung also iPhone anniversary edition is supposedly going to be really expensive. Well, want to come back to that, because of course it then gets to the price of, you know, a pretty decent laptop, or you can afford to get a low end, you know, a decent tablet or something like that. And especially with so many other bits of technology around, really interesting to think about, and, you know, how long should you therefore hold onto it for. So it's a topic I definitely want to come back to, and again would be keen to hear other people's feedback. And you said it, Steve, you know, when you can get something for 200 or 300 euros that does, I would say, 95% of the functionality, you know, how much do you want that extra high-end thing, because it's an interesting design, or it's got just a little bit more. It's tricky, and it comes back to this phone's becoming commodity, and actually for a large portion of the market they are going to experience it through those, you know, mid-tier devices, because actually they're pretty good at what they do. We'll still see the high-end thing because they act as a halo, and they'll, you know, still be selling tens of millions of them. But it's very noticeable that, you know, you talk about something like iPhone or the Samsung flagship sales, and yes, you know, they are doing tens of millions, 50 million, but it's actually still relatively small next to the overall kind of smartphone market, because it is about those mid-tier devices. So yeah, I'm sure we're going to come back to that as a wider discussion point, but probably a good point to sign off. So I'm going to say goodbye from me and thank everyone for listening, and just leave Steve to do the final sign off.
Yes, I'm signing off while just reinstalling the latest Windows 10 mobile production update, which I posted about. The gears have just finished. The gears have just finished spinning on the 950, and I'm reminded how much again I like this phone. And yes, again, if you're listening to this and you happen to have be using an iPhone or an Android phone and it hasn't had an update in 6 months, Yaboo sucks. I'm right up to date with this Windows 10 mobile device. Anyway, goodbye from me. We'll catch you next week. There's so much we hadn't been able to squeeze in this week. We tried to keep it to a short show. We ended up overrunning to about 3/4 of an hour. Another hopefully packed show next week, and I'll say goodbye as well. Thanks for listening.